I think that was Mangalore that took me out of there. And he just attached me to that gypsy person, and I went to the gas chamber. And as I was going into the gas chamber.
And within seconds, we didn't see any men alive. All we saw was smoke coming out of a chimney.
You know, everybody was being pushed into the gas chamber. And I was going backwards. Somehow I was being pushed backwards. And I was like stuck in the door. And I don't know, I guess God told me to do that.
And as I was among the last ones, of course, to get into the crematorium, and the doors were opened into the guest chamber, and of course they couldn't put in all the women at one time, so I again kept on, even inside, kept on going back, waiting for I don't know what, but I kept on going back and couldn't hear a thing. It was overwhelming because except for a few children, you couldn't even hear a cry, and it took seconds for people to disappear.
Everybody is telling you, told us, don't eat, because it's hard to die when they give you the gas because your stomach is so full. We knew we were going to the gas chamber, right? But by some miracle, I don't know how, what, when, water came down instead of the gas.
It's the greatest hoax in human history, and you were brainwashed to believe in it from the day you were born. The Holocaust. 6 million Jews falsely claimed to have been murdered, mostly in gas chambers disguised as shower rooms. There is no evidence of any Jewish gassing deaths via cyanide or carbon monoxide, and no mass graves containing the remains of these millions of gassed Jews. There is outrageously false eyewitness testimony, non-existent mass graves, scientifically impossible mass murder methods, manufactured evidence, hundreds of thousands of quote survivors, and the controlled media promoting the monstrous myth.
Treblinka, the alleged site of the world's largest mass graves. More people are claimed to have been murdered and buried here per square meter than anywhere else in the world. Today, almost nothing remains of the site, and there has been no full-scale archaeological exhumation of the site, revealing the remains of the almost 1 million Jews alleged to be buried here. Gaudy concrete and stones at the site attempt to block future investigations of the ground below. Revisionists claim Treblinka was a transit camp, while believers claim it was a pure extermination camp. We're supposed to take the Soviet Union's word and the lack of documentation surrounding the camp as unquestionable proof that underneath this field lie the remains of almost 1 million Jews. According to the official story, almost 1 million Jews were crammed into small buildings connected to the exhaust pipes of diesel engines from captured Soviet tanks,
were murdered due to inhaling the deadly exhaust,
and were buried in large pits. Then the corpses were dug back up, set on fire, and the remains were then reburied.
There are a multitude of problems with this story.
Engineer Fritz Berg pointed out that diesel engines would have been extremely inefficient as a weapon of mass murder. Take a look at this car advertisement about a man trying to commit suicide by attaching a garden hose to the car's exhaust pipe and breathing in exhaust from its diesel engine. He didn't know that a diesel engine emits a very small amount of carbon monoxide and even emits oxygen. The man realizes the attempt to kill himself with a diesel engine is futile and instead decides to try to kill himself by using the car window against his neck. Diesel engines are so safe, they are used in underground mine shafts where there is poor or no ventilation at all. They are used on ships and submarines. Truck drivers leave their diesel engines on all night without fear.
Diesel exhaust is so relatively safe that recently the American Environmental Protection Agency performed a study where participants were paid to breathe in diluted diesel exhaust for hours in a gas chamber, piped into their lungs directly from the exhaust pipe of a diesel truck parked outside.
Why would the Germans use Soviet diesel engines? Engines which are extremely inefficient at killing people, and in addition, being a Soviet-built engine, the Germans would have had no replacement parts or manuals, etc. The answer is they wouldn't, and they didn't.
Diesel engines are an absurd choice for mass murder, and can't kill in the manner and time alleged. In addition, no mass graves have been shown to contain the remains of almost 1 million Jews. Why? Revisionists claim Treblinka was a transit camp. There are no mass graves containing the remains of almost 1 million Jews at Treblinka because those sent to this transit camp mostly traveled onwards to other camps, and definitely were not gassed in gas chambers disguised as showers. In fact, they took real disinfection showers to keep them alive. Holocaust promoters, also known as exterminationists, claim that a total of 0 Jews were transited through Treblinka, which they claim was a pure extermination camp with an adjacent small labor camp. The book Belzec, Sobibor, Treblinka, The Operation Reinhard Death Camps by Israeli historian Yitzhak Arad is the Bible of these exterminationists. I emailed Arad and wrote, "I have a question that I need answered very specifically, because I need a direct quote from an authority such as yourself on this. Question: approximately how many Jews ever disembarked a train at Treblinka, then, after a period of hours or days, boarded another train and were sent further on to other camps?" He replied, "Jews who arrived by train to Treblinka disembarked were sent in one direction, to the gas chambers. They never boarded other trains and sent to other camps." However, there is an abundance of evidence for Treblinka as a transit camp, a total inversion of the diesel gas chambers disguised as showers myth, and non-existent mass graves of 1 million Jews presented by the exterminationists. The following witnesses from Steven Spielberg's USC Survivors of the Shoah Visual History Foundation describe being transited at Treblinka, along with hundreds and thousands of other Jews. Let's walk through the actual Treblinka process with them.
When they opened the doors, we were
in Treblinka.
Yeah. And what happened on the platform there?
And the platform, you know, like you heard this kind of stories before.
And we came to Treblinka. They took the men on the right side and the women on the left side.
They separate men from women and children.
The ladies separate and the men separate.
And on the station there were several signs, the train to Moscow or Minsk goes in such a time, train to Odessa goes in such a stupid thing. But eventually I look at the sunshine, look at the trees, some birds were around.
What happened first? What did they make you do first?
Nothing. They made me comfortable, gave us to eat.
They were told to turn in their valuables.
And they asked to throw in everything that we have. Documents, rings, whatever.
Tie their shoes together and turn them in.
And while we have been going, a boy came and gave us a piece of string to take off the shoes and put together.
They were told to undress, got their hair cut, and took a shower. This man claims to have been a barber at Treblinka. He describes the typical process.
And another, yeah.
You help people take their clothing off.
Yeah, they have to be enclosed. Uh-huh. And I was working there with 3 other people.
Okay. So you help them take their clothing off?
No, I don't help nobody take clothes off. I don't want to stay close to them. I just shave them with a machine and enclose them, spray it.
That was there in Treblinka?
Yeah.
This is a photo of a child being sprayed with pesticides in Germany in 1945. Spraying people and their clothing was a life-saving measure in order to kill deadly disease-carrying lice. The U.S. Public Health Service shows us how disease prevention was handled at the time, with the large amount of immigrants who went through Ellis Island.
As this happens to be a case of old world typhus fever, which is known to be spread by the body louse, the contacts, those who have had association with the patient during the voyage, are first taken to the delousing plant. Here they must remove all of their clothing. Thoroughly sprayed with soap and water. Next, they are sent under the showers. And finally, each one is sprayed with an insecticide that kills any lice or nits that may still remain in their hair. The clothing of these contacts is placed in net bags, and these bags are sent to the fumigating room. This clothing, together with the baggage of the contact, is placed in fumigating chambers where it is thoroughly disinfested. If necessary, the contacts are isolated in the detention hospital for observation. Every precaution is taken by the quarantine officers to prevent the introduction of disease into the United States.
A similar process took place at Treblinka, Auschwitz, and other camps.
He said to me, if they ask for locksmith next time, get out too. Locksmith, yes, I knew about it. I was in the steam room, you know.
Yeah.
I got out too, and we took Arthur Menke with us and Hermann, and about 100 people went out. And they said, are there any gardeners? Yes, everybody went as a gardener. The gardeners we never saw again,
yeah.
You see. But we were pushed on the side, and we went to a barrack, and we had to undress.
Mm-hmm.
We were searched from top to bottom. Then we went into a shower room. We didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And we got out, and then we came to a room where they gave us each one a new uniform and wooden shoes or something like this.
During the war, there was propaganda about the Nazis steaming people to death in Treblinka steam rooms. These later became gas chambers. The previous witness describes being in a steam room, a non-lethal one, of course. This was part of the delousing process.
And they said, all the people are going to go and get sanitized. We went in, we had to get naked, undressed, and used to run the cold water in the shower.
So we were called not to get in the bags, to undress, and they're looking for people to work, apparently. So they asked us, had to line up again. We still were not, never in no barracks, no nothing. And they were called out to want to know what our profession was.
What did you tell them? What is your profession?
I'm a carpenter.
You told them that you are a carpenter?
A carpenter, yeah.
Before I know it, we were given clothes from the other prisoners.
And they got bread, and they got clothes to put on for the nugget women.
And then we got something to, a slice of bread and glass and a bowl of soup, and we were loaded on another train. The other 700 people, or 650, what was left, we never saw them again. They must have stayed there, all the carpenters or whatever they told them they were. And we went sent to Butzin.
He describes being separated from the carpenters. But we know that Jews like this, who said they were carpenters, were simply sent to camps which needed carpenters. Not gassed. Dr. Peter Black, director of the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, claimed in an email, quote, there is no known instance of a person selected out of Treblinka upon arrival and sent to Majdanek as a forced laborer. Treblinka was a killing center, not a transit camp, unquote. But he's a Zionist selling the biggest hoax in human history. Let's listen to many, many Jews describing being transited to other camps after staying in Treblinka for a few hours or days, along with hundreds and thousands of other men, women, and children.
Oh, in addition to the 104 women, they also took three male doctors, medical doctors. they joined us. They loaded us on the train. It was one boxcar with two milk cans of water.
And what for? They needed 100 women, I don't know. Because when we came to Majdanek, there were thousands of people.
So they put you on back on the same kind of train?
Yes.
In the morning, sure enough, they told us to find some clothes and some shoes, and they put us on a train, 100 girls, and they sent us from on that train to Majdanek.
And there were 100 of us, and then they were reloading us on a train. So we went back into this.
I stayed in line. They picked out 500 young men. They put us back in the cars. In the morning, we came in from Treblinka back to Lublin. City of Lublin, it's very close to Majdanek.
And then back into the same train that brought us in. So we wind up in Majdanek.
They took us, put us in a wagon, all 106 in one wagon. And we went to Majdanek, we came to Majdanek.
And they took exactly 100 men out of this Treblinka, and they put us in a cattle car.
Less than 300 was selected, and we went, they sent us to concentration camp, the Majdanek concentration camp.
There were somewhere around 300 people, youngsters. They were cleaning out whatever people left behind. And the minute they were done cleaning, taking everything out, the Germans marched us right in into the same wagon. And we received small pieces of bread with some so-called coffee. There was the imitation of coffee made by Germans.
300 young people were brought to the train back, put at, you see, the time, water for the people that they could drink on the journey. Where we have to go, where you are going, we didn't know. Later, they mentioned us, we are going to Lublin, Majdanek.
I went to Treblinka. Informed them, I went to Auschwitz. I stood in Treblinka.
Go ahead.
In Treblinka, I was there for no more than 8 days. And then they load us up on cars, on a train, cattle trains. And they told us, they didn't tell us where they'd taken us. And they load us up in the hundreds in each car, men, women, and children. And so many people were pushed into this truck that there was no room to sit. The only place, the only room was there is to stay still. There was no movement, nothing. And from there, they took us to Auschwitz.
I was one of the 300 which went to the right. From there, we were taken to a place called Majdanek, which was another death camp. Over there, we spent 10 days just doing nothing.
How long were you in Treblinka?
3 hours, 4 hours. After a few hours, some prisoner detachment came and cleaned the cars we came, and we were 50 by a car, and we went someplace.
So what happened to these 350? Where were you taken?
The 350 people, was everybody was happy, we were going to work, blue and beautiful, and they sent us to Lublin Majdanek.
So the evening, they put us back on a cattle car to Buchin, which wasn't too far away.
Mm-hmm. So we came to Lublin. I was in the first rally. Mm-hmm. There was maybe about 2,000 in the back.
After the separation of the men and the women, where did the women go?
We just stayed in one place. They didn't keep us very long. We stayed there two or three days. We did not get in a barrack or anything like it in Treblinka. They took us back to the trains. Here, we were all women, no men.
How many women would you guess?
Every train, every car was packed, and we went to Majdanek.
The exterminationist claimed that all Jews were immediately sent to diesel gas chambers disguised as shower rooms is totally indefensible. We know thousands upon thousands of Jewish men, women, and children boarded other trains at Treblinka and were sent to other camps, exactly as the Germans described on their sign at the entrance. There are no mass graves at Treblinka containing the remains of almost 1 million Jews because they weren't gassed, burned, and buried there. They went to other camps. There are few surviving records regarding Treblinka. But this man claims to have been on a train from Treblinka to Majdanek of 356 Jews, for which documentation exists.
They selected 356 people and sent them to Majdanek, loaded them in the train the same night, and we landed up in Majdanek. The whole transport is there, it's registered in. It's there.
There's a convergence of evidence proving thousands upon thousands of Jews were transited through Treblinka from all over Europe at many different times throughout the camp's life. Holocaust promoters need these Jews and the thousands upon thousands transited with them not to exist, because their very existence proves the pure extermination camp story to be a pure lie. The men and women were separated by gender. Because the women didn't know where the men went, and vice versa, they each assumed the others were shot or gassed.
Tell me what you
and
saw.
And I saw, while I'm going, I saw the men completely naked. Naked, so why they have the hands up? They don't have anything, but they got the hands up. And they went and they shoot everybody.
Did you see them shoot them?
No. I didn't see the men anymore.
We can look at the February 14th transport as a case study. A group of women and a few doctors were chosen to go to Majdanek, and 150 men were sent to the Treblinka 1 labor camp. Because they were separated, the women assumed the men were gassed, and the men assumed the women were gassed. However, both groups were not sent to the non-existent gas chambers. They were kept alive, fed, given water, and sent to camps where the German war effort could use their skills the most. Women and children were transited too. The Holocaust religion's claim that no Jews were transited through Treblinka is completely indefensible. No wonder why they lobbied to make simply questioning their hoax punishable by years in prison in several countries. In any event, the case is settled. 100 items of evidence, together with the book by Graf and Matonio, show that Treblinka II could never have been anything but an ordinary and modest Deutschgangslager, that is, a transit camp for Jews being transported to Majdanek, Auschwitz, or other concentration and labor camps to the south or east. Along with the great lie of Auschwitz, the crude lie of Treblinka belongs, therefore, in the trash can of history. Dr. Robert Farrison.
You were one of those 500?
I was 500. We stayed for one day in Treblinka, and then they brought us back to Warsaw, and from Warsaw they took us to Lublin, to Majdanek.
And so you said that you already knew what was happening in Treblinka.
We knew, but we couldn't do nothing.
You saw the evidence. You saw with your eyes.
No, you cannot see nothing.
They made the count, needed 100 women, so they counted 100 women. And over 100 went to the crematorium, to the gas chamber, and we went across, was another barrack.
Okay, now, did you know they were going to the gas chamber?
No.
Okay, then just tell me what you saw. You saw them walking into?
Into another door. That's all.
What happened to the other people?
Were gassed and killed. Killed by gas and burned.
Did you see these people going into these rooms?
No, I didn't. Because I was separated by the wall, everything was, what was happening was out of my vision, so.
At the time, did you know what happened to the rest of these people?
Well, it was 43, and I knew in 42 what's going to happen.
When it was the gas chamber, I don't know it was the gas chamber.
Well, what did you see? But just tell me, there was a big
they
building?
They opened the door, I saw a white wall, that's all that I can
white
see.
Wall?
That's all, I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I just want you to tell me what you saw.
I don't know, I don't see anything.
Most of the Jews transited through Treblinka didn't see any gas chambers, so their testimony about gassings would be considered hearsay in court. That's where Sonderkommando witnesses come in. These are Jews who claim to have personally witnessed gassings and disposed of bodies, but their stories are scientifically impossible fiction. I came across an interesting article titled How to Poison Your Fictional Characters. This article offers advice to writers on how to believably portray poisoning deaths in their stories. Do you have a fictional character you need to kill, but you don't want them strangled or shot or stabbed with a knife? Here's a section about cyanide. Cyanide can be swallowed, inhaled, or absorbed through the skin, and interferes with the red cell's abilities to extract oxygen, causing an internal asphyxia. The victim literally suffocates to death as he breathes in oxygen he cannot use. The effects occur almost instantly when the cyanide is swallowed, causing immediate unconsciousness, convulsions, and death within 15 minutes. After death, the victim's blood may be cherry red in color, and the skin pinker than usual. We can witness this for ourselves. This man, after being found guilty of arson, ingested cyanide in the courtroom. He quickly turned red and began having seizures, making involuntary movements and sounds.
Your Honor, Your Honor, Your Honor.
Then became unconscious. And shortly after that, died. Here's a similar website, the Writer's Forensic Blog, written by a medical doctor and storyteller. Carbon monoxide, a deadly gas.
Once exposed to carbon monoxide, it seeps into your lungs with every breath you take, making its deadly way into the air sacs of your lungs, where it binds with hemoglobin, the red blood cells that carry oxygen through your body. The problem is carbon monoxide latches on to hemoglobin more quickly than oxygen, and it starts taking over. On the most basic of levels, your cells are literally suffocating.
Carboxyhemoglobin is bright red in color and imparts this hue to the blood. When the medical examiner performs an autopsy and sees bright, cherry red blood, he suspects carbon monoxide poisoning as the cause of death. This finding is not absolutely conclusive, since cyanide inhalation or ingestion can also result in bright, cherry red blood and tissues. Here are some examples of this telltale, bright, cherry red coloration evident in carbon monoxide poisoning victims. Even meat is deliberately injected with carbon monoxide in order to give it that bright red coloration that makes it appear to be fresh and healthy. So both cyanide and carbon monoxide victims display this telltale, bright, cherry red coloration. Cyanide and carbon monoxide, both alleged to be used during World War II to gas millions of Jews, cyanide at camps such as Auschwitz, and carbon monoxide in places such as Treblinka. But how did eyewitnesses to the gassings describe the color of the victims? They were blue, black, and swollen. What I saw in the gas chamber was ghastly, a horrible scene. Yakov Silverberg. The bodies were tossed out, blue, wet with sweat and urine, the legs smeared with excrement and menstrual blood. Kurt Gerstein.
What did I see? I see the people I saw 15 minutes ago. I see them all dead, standing up with their children, black and blue.
The nature of the corpses, on account of the terrible effect of the poison gas, was such that one could see only blue, black, bloated, and mushy flesh that had once belonged to human beings. Zyklon B has the property of disintegrating a human body almost completely, of causing the human lung to burst, and of turning the rest of the body into a jelly-like state. When the door finally was opened, the Sonderkommando was assaulted by an overwhelming stench and the ghastly sight of putrid flesh. The bodies had turned blue and were bloated to double and triple their normal size. If this sounds like bad horror fiction, that's because it is. Out of the so-called witnesses of the alleged gassings of millions of Jews, almost all of them failed to mention the correct textbook cherry red color of cyanide and carbon monoxide poisoning victims. When devising these atrocity stories, these liars made big mistakes which exposed their lies. Those poisoned with cyanide and carbon monoxide don't turn green, blue, or yellow. They turn a distinct cherry red. They should have read How to Poison Your Fictional Characters.
I saw the mothers with the children standing up before, because the gas chamber will take maybe 500 people. It used to make 2,500 people. Everybody standing up. There was no room for anything else but standing up. And when you see that after, it's, you know, some of them are black and blues from the gas.
Dario Gabay came out publicly in the 1990s, 50 years after the end of World War II, and told horror stories about being forced to work in Nazi gas chambers / crematoriums to a gullible public. His brother and two cousins also claimed to have worked as gas chamber slaves, yet all miraculously survived. Dario Gabay appeared in Steven Spielberg's Oscar award-winning documentary, The Last Days. This is the discredited, shameless propaganda hoax, which includes a really vicious anti-German liar, Irene Zisblatt, who, among other absurd fantasies, claims she had her tattoo removed by Dr. Mengele, had her skin selected to be turned into a lampshade, and repeatedly defecated and swallowed diamonds for a year and a half while in Auschwitz and on death marches. Like Gabay, she only went public with her lies in the 1990s. Let's hear her fairy tale about escaping from inside a gas chamber.
I think that was Mengele that took me out of there. And he just attached me to that gypsy prison and I went to the gas chamber. And as I was going into the gas chamber, you know, everybody was being pushed into the gas chamber. And I was going backwards. Somehow I was being pushed backwards. And I was like stuck in the door. And I don't know, I guess God told me to do that.
Dario Gabay, like Zisblatt, is playing a role on behalf of Zionism. Dario Gabay is a liar, a professional liar, an actor. When he says he saw blue Jews standing up dead inside a gas chamber, he is literally acting. After all, Gabay is a professional Hollywood actor. Here's a clip from his role in the Korean War film, The Glory Brigade. Another Auschwitz Sonderkommando, Henry Tauber, claims the impossible. He claims they routinely cremated three corpses in one cremation oven, stacked one on top of the other, and they all burned within 20 minutes.
We loaded the dead bodies, one on the other, and then one on top. Three. Five people picked up the three bodies. Put them on the rails, and this was 15 bodies. It took 20 minutes. 15 ovens, 3 bodies, 20 minutes.
Today, cremations are performed in computer-controlled chambers.
After the container is loaded in and the door sealed, a series of computer-controlled burners are activated. The heat inside the chamber must reach as high as 1,800 degrees to consume a corpse over a period of 1.5 hours.
Today's state-of-the-art cremation ovens take an hour and a half to cremate one body. However, Tauber said three at a time were shoved into ovens and burned in 20 minutes. Look at his unnatural eye movement when he tells the lie.
15 ovens, three bodies, 20 minutes.
Tauber had to claim three Jews were cremated per oven in 20 minutes. Outrageously impossible. In order to provide eyewitness testimony for the incredibly inflated Auschwitz death toll at the time of 4 million. Today, the official Auschwitz death toll stands at the still inflated total of about 1 million. Remember Ellis Island with its shower and disinfection process? Even Ellis Island had cremation ovens. In order to dispose of those who died en route or on Ellis Island, cremation ovens are not proof of mass gassings and were necessary due to typhus epidemics at the camps. The Holocaust promotion industry even uses fraudulent Jewish witnesses to describe camp liberations of camps that were never liberated. Steven Spielberg's USC Survivors of the Shoah Visual History Foundation produced a book and DVD titled Holocaust, The Events and Their Impact on Real People. In a section about camp liberators, who do they choose? Leon Bass, of the Fraudulent Liberators documentary, which falsely claimed that African-American soldiers liberated concentration camps. On the next page is Jacob Sandbrand, claiming to have been involved in the liberation of several camps as a Jewish sergeant in the Soviet Army. On another page of the book, we see the dates major camps were liberated, and can read, Treblinka, Sobibor, and Belzec were not liberated. The Nazis destroyed these death camps in 1943. The official story is that Treblinka was not liberated, but dismantled well before the Soviets overran the area. Even though it was never liberated, let's hear Jacob Sandbrand lie about liberating Treblinka.
You said that you liberated Treblinka.
Right.
What do you remember about coming into Treblinka? What do you remember? What did you see?
We saw stacks of bodies piled. Hundreds of bodies, frozen, piled up one on top of the other.
What time of the year was this?
Either August or September.
How could stacks of bodies be frozen in summer?
Did you see the ovens?
I saw some of them, yes, with the ashes.
Did you know what they were?
I had an idea. I knew they weren't baking bread.
Actually, according to the Orthodox story, Treblinka had no cremation ovens, only massive burial pits. They did, however, have ovens for baking bread. These are photographs of Treblinka's bakery. The only ovens at Treblinka were in fact used to provide bread for thousands upon thousands of Jews who were not gassed, but sent to other camps.
And they got the bread.
They gave him the pieces of bread and a bit of butter.
Beverly Hills' own Zelda Gordon described Jews disappearing and instantly turning into smoke coming out of crematorium chimneys that didn't exist. She lies about being inside a gas chamber. In another interview, she clearly describes the gas chamber she claimed she was inside as a bathhouse.
Women were coming in into our bathhouse, and I was also entering that place, and in front of me they were all being undressed and sent into another room to the showers.
The Germans accused of mass gassing didn't defend themselves from these bogus claims. Often they were tortured in order to give false confessions, such as Rudolf Hoss, former commandant of Auschwitz, who signed an affidavit in English, a language he didn't speak. He confessed to overseeing the murder of 3 million Jews. Today we know this to be impossible. Currently, the total Auschwitz death figure stands at the still overinflated 1 million mark. Many important Germans wound up dead while in Allied custody. Many confessed to impossible things.
Adolf Eichmann, after being drugged, disguised as a woman,
and kidnapped by the Israelis, claimed at his show trial that Jews at Treblinka were gassed using a captured Soviet submarine engine.
He was assigned to turn these two hovels into hermetically sealed buildings so that the gases of a Russian U-boat engine could be introduced to kill people. This is all I saw because there was nothing more to see.
But during the war, the Germans never captured a Soviet submarine.
A short while before, Jews had been killed, and as a result of the gases that had been produced in the gas chambers where Jews had been buried hurriedly, blood spouted up, and it looked like a ghoulish blood fountain.
Ghoulish blood fountains, yet another imaginative holohoax impossibility. There are hundreds of thousands of Jews claiming to be Holocaust survivors.
This is a picture that was taken at my father's cousin's grandchild's bat mitzvah 3 years ago. And these people in this picture are all survivors.
If the Germans planned to kill every Jew that they got their hands on, how did any survive? The answer is the Germans didn't plan to kill all the Jews, and they didn't. The Germans kept the Jews in relatively similar conditions to American concentration camps for the Japanese. And like the Americans, they put their inmates to work and even paid them. This is Auschwitz, where nearby inmates worked to create rubber for the war effort. This is Manzanar, where inmates also created rubber for the war effort. What's the difference? Manzanar was in California, and the Americans won the war. And as we all know, victors write the history books. But unlike America, the Nazi camp system had a major problem with deadly disease-carrying lice. The Germans used a form of cyanide called Zyklon B, which has the industrial use of killing these deadly disease-carrying lice. This insecticide was used in delousing chambers all around the Nazi camp system and is still used today. It was used to gas clothing to kill fleas and lice. The SS Hygiene Institute manual titled Disinfection, Decontamination, and Disinfestation lists several of the disease-carrying pests in the area. How to deal with them? The pesticide Zyklon B. Here you can watch the U.S. Coast Guard fumigate a ship with similar pesticides.
Specially trained details of Coast Guardsmen fumigated countless vessels from stem to stern to prevent the outbreak of epidemics which might have originated in foreign ports.
If you go to Auschwitz, you can still see today the blue staining through the wall of real gas chambers designed and equipped for gassing inmate clothing. This is residue from the cyanide insecticide. Zyklon B was actually used to save Jewish lives. Towards the end of the war, a relentless Allied bombing campaign, which included firebombing civilian centers such as Dresden and dropping nuclear bombs on the civilian centers of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, took a toll on the German infrastructure. Food, medical supplies, and even life-saving Zyklon B weren't able to be delivered to the camps. When I was a child, I distinctly remember walking into a firehouse and seeing a war documentary projected onto a giant screen. I was shocked and scarred by the horrific images of piles of emaciated corpses being bulldozed into mass graves. But this footage was taken at Bergen-Belsen, a camp which today is not alleged to have had homicidal gas chambers. It was only when I was an adult that I learned that these people died as a result of Allied bombing, lack of supplies, typhus, disease, and starvation at the very end of the most devastating war in human history. They weren't gassed with diesel engines or insecticide. I noticed something about the cover of Arad's book. This photograph is something called a negative image. A positive image is a normal image. A negative image is a total inversion, in which light areas appear dark and vice versa. Let's invert this negative image. Image, adjustments, invert. Now you can see the real picture. The truth. Like this photograph, exterminationist gas chamber hoaxers invert the truth. Yitzhak Arad is himself suspected of committing very real war crimes against civilians and anti-Soviet patriots in Lithuania. Israel refused to cooperate with the investigation. A Lithuanian newspaper ran an expose titled, "The Expert with Blood on His Hands." These Holocaust exterminationists have a lot to hide, but thanks to unprecedented access to new information, the hoax of the 20th century is collapsing. Along with the great lie of Auschwitz, the crude lie of Treblinka belongs, therefore, in the trash can of history. And I agree.
But by some miracle, I don't know how, what, when, water came down instead of the gas.